From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 14th day of August 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's with Stuart Peterson. Nick Paulson, agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, has taken a deep dive into those 90 million corn acres that USDA says farmers planted this year and compared them to the maximum number of available corn acres in the base over the last 4 years. You're not going to believe that maximum number, but you'll need to listen up because it's way north of where you think it is. We'll hear from him, and we'll also check in on the weather forecast, too. From Drew Lerner, he's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago. September corn today down 7 cents, finished at $3.59 a bushel. December, 6.25 lower for the new crop harvest month at $3.70 and a quarter. The March down 6.75 at $3.83 and a quarter. And next year's July, $3.97 and a half, down 7 cents. August soybeans 11 lower, $8.61. November at $8.78, down 11 cents. In January, 10.5 lower at $8.91 and a half. Next year's March at $9.03 and three quarters, down 10 and a quarter cents. The bean oil futures 7 cents lower, $29.10. Bean meal $2.93, down $4.80. Soft bread winter wheat a penny and three quarters higher in the lead September at $4.73 and three quarters. The hard red up 1 and a quarter at $3.84 and three quarters. Live cattle futures in Chicago. August contract $100.20, down 35 cents. October down 75 cents at $98.50. August feeders at $134.47 and a half, $6.75 higher. September up $5.62 and a half at $132.82 and a half. And lean hogs for the day. August contract 40 cents higher at $79.40 on the day. A Dow Jones Industrial Average about 740 points lower. The U.S. dollar is up 0.199. The gold futures at $1,520.50, $18.30 higher, and the S&P 500 around 78, 79 points lower for the day. Crude oil is down $1.88 a barrel. Ethanol futures 3 3/10 cents lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel down 3 3/10 as well. And the price of gasoline 6 cents lower at $1.67 and 6 cents. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org, willag.org. There you can listen to the whole of our agricultural programming anytime you'd like. You can also find us in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and of course the NPR One app. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, so I want to start actually with the Dow because it was down hard throughout the day. What'd you make of that?
Well, I hate to see it, to be honest. I mean, not just from an investment perspective, but also from the perspective that causes people who are in the Dow that use our markets, you know, as an offset or a hedge on the Dow to come over here, you know, and get out of positions to try and exit and free up money. And I think that's what we're seeing happen. We're seeing continued push, and I think once the Dow stabilizes, we'll stabilize. I mean, weren't down as hard as I thought we might be, but it certainly doesn't bode well in that respect. Until we see a good stabilization in the Dow, we're going to continue to just kind of lumber around, I think.
Hey, so maybe we should go through those support and resistance levels. They've changed, I'm certain, and they'll be important given what we just talked about this week and maybe the managed money when we get to that too.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, when you look at support and resistance, the corn changed dramatically. Beans didn't change quite as much, but September corn support is at 352, 301, and 290, and we've got resistance at 384, 410, and 436, and there's a gap left behind from 379 to 385 and a quarter, which gives me hope that we can try and go up there and fill it. December support, 362, 315, and then 290. Resistance is at 392, 416, 440. And there, too, we have a gap. And that goes from 385 to 392 and a quarter. And we know gaps normally get filled, whether they get filled in this contract year or the other contract year, but they normally get filled. When you look at beans, support is at 780 in September, 750, and then 725. And I should tell you, Todd, what I did is I went to a continuous monthly chart for these, because after the big moves, I want to see just how much of a difference it made. On resistance is at 881 in September, 943 and 994. November support 854, 835 and 815, and then resistance $9, 954 and 999. And one of the things that's interesting when you look at the managed money that you mentioned is you can see the shift going on there too. We saw soft red wheat go from 5,000 long contracts to only 2,000 long this week, compared to 34,000 long the week before that. Corn is down to just 6,000 long contracts with managed money, compared to 85,000 last week and 124,000 the week before. Beans, 63,000 short, compared to 78,000 last week. And when you look at soy meal, 36,000 short compared to 39,000, which seems kind of strange because we know that the African swine fever is definitely going to affect demand. But the one that's really surprising is soy oil, because it's 16,000 short compared to 36,000 short. And I'm telling you, if you were a gambling person, you would never want to gamble on soy oil, okay, because it hardly ever changes. It's only a matter of a few thousand contracts at a time. So this is a big change, and I think some of that's coming because when you look at the crude palm oil prices, you know, it's unlikely that they're going to rise a whole lot further than where they are unless bean prices actually rise or something from a weather standpoint comes along, which makes us more competitive. I don't know if a lot of people realize it, but soy oil is a replacement for crude oil in salad dressings, basically. And so the whole thing here is you know, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be impacting everything. And you look at the bigger picture too, you know, the African swine fever, like I mentioned, also doesn't necessarily demand as much soy meal, so it may not demand as much soy oil or make as much excess soy oil as we normally see. So we could possibly see that price come up a little bit.
Yeah, just for a couple of clarification points, you said the soy oil was a replacement for crude oil. It's a replacement for palm oil, which I know is what you meant. But
crude palm oil. We don't use crude oil in salad dressings.
Yeah, we were talking about the crude palm spread. However,
that would be something.
Yeah, that would be something. Yeah, and then the other thing, just for clarification, on soybeans, you're now using the lead option monthly continuous chart, correct? So it's the lead option, or is it the or you're using the November?
Yes, I actually use the continuous chart for September, which is the lead. And then I did the continuous chart for December also. So those are individual continuous charts.
Only the September contract and only the December contracts. Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
Rather than
the lead option. Okay.
Right.
Just for clarification.
Yep.
So
that's okay.
If people are looking, that's what they'll find.
Right.
What else do we have? Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
We haven't talked about the USDA report yet.
No, we have not. And I know that, you know, that the market was extremely shocked by that particular report. I'm not sure all of us were as shocked as the market might have been. You know, we knew that there were a lot of acres that were planted into corn in place of beans. So I was expecting a lower bean acreage number. I also was expecting the corn number to stay the same, which it did not. But they did adjust, you know, harvested acres down to 91.1% compared to 91.5 is what we would normally look at. But the biggest things, I think, when you look at the overall report itself, is just that, you know, there were so many people betting on the fact that everything was terrible. Well, one of the things that I noticed in the report that they did not mention is, you know, there was no objective yield on this report. They didn't go out and weigh cobs and do anything else. And therefore, that's why it was pretty shocking, I think. When you look at the number that was out there at 169.5 and 48.5, I believe that those basically were numbers that come off of a model. And so next month we will have objective yields. And when I was at the USDA data users meeting this year, this is something we talked about, getting rid of the August objective yields, because it's too early. and oftentimes just too misleading. So I think that was another shock to a lot of people. They took this for, this is the way it is. This is real. And I always like to go, and you know this, Todd, I like to go and look at the 90% confidence level they have on this report. And so corn was at 6.2%. What does that mean? Well, they told us 13.9 billion bushels. That means we could go to 14.7, or we could go all the way down to 13.04. Now, their average for against the final crop is 305 million bushels difference, either higher or lower. The lowest they've ever been is 5 million bushels on corn. The highest they've ever been is 940 million bushel difference. But when you look at below and above the final years, it's pretty even. Corn has been 9 years below the final and 11 years above the final on this particular report. Now, beans, the deviation is 11.4%. That means that we could have a 4.1 billion or we could have a 3.26 billion. We're currently projected at 3.68. So when you look at the average, they're normally off on average over the last 20 years by 24 million bushels. The lowest they've ever been is zero. In other words, they actually got it right on one report at some point in time. And the highest has been 107 million. So that's a pretty tight range. So, and the below and above years over the last 20, they've been 10 years below and 10 years above. So, you know, it's a situation where when I see these confidence levels as high as, you know, at these percentages, that tells me that they know that there's issues out there and they're not going to take any big chances. They're going to give them a wide range to be able to get as close as they can to what's really going to happen. And so I'm looking forward to next month when we actually get some objective yield and we find out if the cobs are filled out to the tip, you know, and all of those types of things that'll be coming in off of that report.
You and everybody else. Hey, thank you so much.
Yes. It's one of those things. The other thing I tell you, Argentina, this is kind of interesting. I was digging around and I found this that, you know, this could actually support our beans. Argentina's got an election coming in October. And on Sunday, I read that basically, you know, they had a what they call a protectionist candidate win. And before all of their elections, it seems like if they follow the normal pattern, the farmer basically slows his bean selling way down over the next 3 to 4 months, you know, and especially if we continue to see a drop in the peso, which normally happens before an election. So it's a situation where there's two things that can happen based on this. The protectionist candidate, if he would get elected in October, that could put a real kink into the current negotiations between the EU for trade with four of the South American countries because they all have to agree. The bigger thing is China needs Argentine beans during that period because, you know, we just talked about this, I think, last week, that if August is as robust as far as exports go in Brazil, it appears that there's going to be little to no carryover. And so we'll find out. You know, just like here in the U.S., I remember back in the late 90s, we were going to run out of corn, we were going to run out of corn, we were going to run out of corn. That never did happen. But I think when you look at Brazil and the fact that they don't have weather that allows them to store like we have here in the United States, it could really be an interesting period. You know, and so will China buy directly from us? Probably not, but they'll buy from somebody else who buys from us. And so that could give us some added support.
It's always good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That's Jackie Vike. She is with Stuart Peterson. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Nick Paulson, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He's been digging through some of the numbers released by the United States Department of Agriculture in its crop production and acreage update out on the 12th day of August. Thanks, Nick, for being here. I think most producers are concerned about the 90 million acres that USDA says will be in the corn crop this year. And they're concerned that the corn base in the United States just isn't that big. But there are some reasons why this works when you add, 11 some million acres of prevent plant into that number too.
Yeah, so I joined in and listened to the podcast, or excuse me, the webinar that that Scott Irwin and Todd Hubbs put out from the department yesterday morning. And I think there was quite a bit of confusion, it seemed like, from the questions in terms of how we could have between planted plus prevent plant over 100 million acres of corn, given some of the restrictions on prevent plant. And producers are obviously very correct. They understand that you're limited on prevent plant to the maximum number of acres you've planted to that crop in the past 4 years. And so I think a lot of people look towards the national corn numbers. So total planted acres on corn over the last 4 years, of which the maximum is 94 million, I think, from 2016. But that's taking that's only looking at the national total. And how you have to think about it is that each individual farmer has the ability to claim up to the maximum number of acres they planted to that crop. So once you do the mathematical operation in the correct order, I guess to get kind of nerdy about it, is there's actually well over 100 million acres that are floating around out there, so to speak, that could be allocated to corn, whether it's planted acres, which is the 90 million number, or the prevent plant, which is the 11.2 number, and then the 101.2 total for corn that USDA put out in their report.
Yeah, so you did those numbers, and rather than doing all the numbers with all the farmers, which probably would have been a huge calculation, you said, what if I just do the by county?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at the national number, the most planted acres to corn was 94 million, but then if you look at county by county and take, you know, the most corn acres planted at the county level in each county over the last 4 years, and then add up each one of those maximum numbers, that gets you to, I think my number was something like 108 million acres. And that would still understate it when you think about it at the farm level, because, you know, if you add up every individual farmer's highest planted corn acreage over the last 4 years, you'd get something even greater than 108. But 108 by itself gets us beyond the 101.2 that we've seen. So
it explains the acreage figure. Anything to say about the yield number?
You know, I'm not gonna defend or criticize the yield number. You know, it seems like there's a lot of speculation that yield number might be high, given the conditions under which the corn, a bulk of the corn crop was planted this year, conditions that we're seeing in the field in various parts of the major corn producing regions here in the Corn Belt. You know, but that's the yield number that's out right now. It's not an objective survey based number yet. That number could obviously change from now to harvest, but it's the estimate that USDA is going with for right now.
Yeah, so there was no objective yield survey in this August report. USDA made that change earlier in the year, meaning they didn't actually go in the field and make counts. They did survey farmers, and mm-hmm. then they did some satellite work, and
yep.
Of course, use their trend-adjusted weather model. And they're still 6.5 bushels below the trend-adjusted weather model, too, at 169.5 for corn.
Yeah, and I think putting too much stock into a yield estimate now, I mean, obviously the market has moved quite a bit this week with that yield number coming out, but there's a lot of time left in the growing season for that number to come down, go up. You know, the one thing I can guarantee you is that the yield probably won't be 169.5 bushels. Whether it's bigger than that or smaller than that, you can put your own probability distribution around that number. The August forecast, I think, tends to be the most accurate based on some of the things that Scott Irwin's looked at.
We'll see how that works out with no objective yield in it. Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Again, that's a different August number than we've seen in the past, too, so you have to remember that.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much. That's Nick Paulson. He is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Well, there are a couple of things I'd like you all to put into your calendar. Some of you may be thinking that Agronomy Day here on the Urbana-Champaign campus is coming up this Thursday, because it's the third Thursday of the month. It's actually the third Thursday of the third full week of the month, so it's August 22nd. Not this Thursday, but the following one. So if you're planning on Agronomy Day, not this Thursday, but the following Thursday. And then, of course, Farm Progress Show is at the end of the month, and it's in Decatur this year. I'll be hosting events on the stage at the University of Illinois tent, and you can find out all the details there on our website at willag.org. org in the calendar. You'll note that Orion Samuelson will be in the tent. He'll be hosting the 10 o'clock show. I'll host the 2 o'clock show, and we have a whole series of folks already signed up to be up on stage with each of us. I hope you can join us as well. That's the Farm Progress Show at the end of this month in Decatur. All the details on Agronomy Day and the Farm Progress Show are on our website at willag.org. On this Wednesday, we're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. I'm wondering if you can walk me through the Corn Belt and talk about places that have gotten rain, others that might need it, and how it divides up. So I'm thinking North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin has, but give me kind of what your assessment might be.
Yeah, boy, you know, there's a lot of variation out there, and it is going to be kind of complicated to kind of describe it all to you. The interior part of north central into northeastern North Dakota and northern Minnesota still running fairly dryish. They've had less than a half inch of rain this past week. The same thing is true for the southeast corner of South Dakota. And then there's a larger area from southwestern Minnesota into a big part of Iowa that has not seen a lot of precipitation here over the past week. And as you recall, that the whole last month plus a week or so has been below average rainfall for a big part of Iowa, especially the central and east, though. So we haven't done anything to fix their issue. Farther to the north, up in northern Wisconsin, the rains have been minimal there. There's not a lot of crop that's produced there. The area that's most important in Wisconsin has seen a fair amount of rain. In fact, there's been some locally heavy rainfall over the past week, with totals getting up over 3 inches. Then if we drop down into Illinois, boy, there's been a lot of contrast there. Some counties, about six of them in the interior south of Illinois, have had anywhere from 2.5 to 6 inch plus amounts of rainfall over the past 7 days. But you get up into central Illinois, and some spots there have either been dry or have less than a half inch of rain. The same thing has occurred in portions of central into southeastern Indiana and a large part of eastern Michigan. And even on top of that, there's some spots in Kentucky and Ohio that also have done rather poorly. So it's a big mix. I imagine if you drove your car from one end of the Midwest to the other, you would see so much variation from one field to the next that it's going to be really difficult to try to assess what the bottom line is.
Is the next week even rainfall out at all?
Well, not really. I think we will see a little more rain, though, in Iowa and some of the drier pockets in southwestern Minnesota, so they'll do a little bit better. Illinois is still going to be a split, I think. Some areas in Illinois are definitely going to get some rain. I'm just not convinced we're going to see the drier pockets getting the kind of rain that they need to really make a big difference. And then the farther east you go, into Indiana, Ohio, even parts of Kentucky, I'm afraid the rains are going to be a little more erratic there, and we're still going to have some pockets that are just not doing a very good job with moisture, and the crop stress there in those pockets obviously is going to continue to be an issue.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget, you can find the whole of our program to listen to anytime you'd like, always at WILLAG.org, or as a podcast in Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, and the NPR One app. I'm Todd Gleason.